Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest is one of the exceptional superintendents across this country. I had the privilege and the honor to meet Dr. Tamara Allen Thomas. We were in Pittsburgh together for the Forge Future Summit. And I believe Dr. Allen Thomas, if, correct me if I'm wrong, we were in the same group doing site visits during the Forge Future Summit. And we just wound up talking the whole time, having great conversations about education, how we can improve this in totality. And I said to Dr. Allen Thomas, and this was a while ago, I said, "You got to come on my podcast." And without hesitation, she accepted my invitation. So it is an absolute honor to welcome Dr. Tamara Allen Thomas, who is the proud superintendent of Clarendon City School District. That is in Pennsylvania. And I tell you, she is a dynamite instructional leader, systems leader. But more importantly, I know this within her learning organization, she makes it a point to establish authentic relationships with her staff, her community, and her students. So it is an absolute honor to bring Dr. Tamara Allen Thomas on Voices for Excellence. Dr. Allen Thomas, hey!
Yes. Hello, thank you. Thank you. I have to bring you on the road with me all the time for that type of introduction. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
So good to have you, Dr. Allen Thomas. I can't wait to see you again in person because yes. I tell you, when we get together, it is really a 1 hour, 2 hour diatribe about education from the beginning all the way to the end. That's why I know this episode is going to be great because my audience will be able to get to capture what a conversation would be between Dr. Connor and Dr. Allen Thomas. So are you ready, Doc?
Yes, sir.
All right, let's do this now. I know you. I know the work you're doing. I'm a fan of the work you're doing. But when leaders, teachers, and education stakeholders from Pennsylvania and beyond unpack Dr. Tamara Allen Thomas' leadership signature, what song describes your excellence and equity stance in the ecosystem?
So that's a really interesting question that I had to think about. I have to think about. And when I think about that, the song that immediately came to me was Nas, "I Know I Can Be What I Want to Be. If I work hard at it, I could be where I want to be.
I could be where I want to be."
Yes. And that resonates with me because here you have this young Black girl from the inner city whose mom was 14 when she had me, who was not destined to be in the position and sit in the seat that I'm in. So that is not only just when we talk about equity and leadership, it is who I am. And no matter what, and that song goes on and says about whatever your circumstances and your situations are, you can be what you want to be if you work hard at it. And I feel like that's just been my life song.
Absolutely. Dr. Allen Thomas, I tell you, and you would appreciate this. I get in many, many banters about who's the best rapper, right? And
yes.
About that. And you can't forget Nas. You cannot forget Nas. He is a legacy rapper in the game. 90s head. I'm a 90s hip hop, you know, person.
Yes.
But Nas's song, "I Know I Can Be What I Want to Be," right? I mean,
yes.
If you think about that, that is just not only inspirational, the words in that song too, not just inspirational for kids, but also inspirational for adults as they're striving, you know, up the ladder. And when I think about, you know, you highlighting your circumstance from where you came from, same thing with me. You know, with my circumstances, that, you know, we knew what we can be, right? We knew our talents and we strived to get there. And just a great song to unpack. And when we think about it, right, with all of the obstacles and pitfalls and barriers, that we have faced to get to where we're at, and then to also to see representation, specifically gender representation, Black female being a superintendent. I know those young girls, Black and brown girls in Clareton City are saying, I know I can be what I want to be because of Dr. Alan Thomas. But congratulations, year two.
Thank you.
Yay, you
Yeah,
made it,
well,
right?
starting year three, I just finished up
Oh,
year two. So
starting year
starting year
three.
three,
So
yes.
yay, year
Yes.
three. That is so huge because we know the tenure, right? The years of a tenure with for superintendent. So year three is just remarkable. But you're at Clareton City School District in
Yes.
Pennsylvania. Now, as you're entering year three, what would you have told yourself on day one of your first year as now you have a true authentic understanding of the landscape in Clareton City, and you have navigated through the hurdle of learning the district in totality. But what would you tell yourself 2 years ago, first day, July 1, that day one?
So one of the first things I would say is congratulations. You have made it through the door because, again, in this field, we are limited with how many African American superintendents, also women superintendents. So congratulations would be the first thing. You're through the door. Now the work begins. I would say to myself, continue to lead authentically, follow systems. Make sure that you determine and analyze and make sure that the changes aren't something that are superficial, but observe. Don't go in thinking, hey, this all needs to be turned upside down. No, take a minute, pause. Don't underestimate the power of your community, would be two. Get the right people on the bus and in the right seat. So that means taking time to know your people in order to make those moves. So spend time really getting to know the people, their roles, their positions, to understand what it is that they are asked to do, and are they the right people in that position? And remember, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. So make sure you start and you lead with that care of the people first. And most importantly, take time for yourself. Make sure that this work is heavy. This work requires a lot of you, but take time for yourself.
Dr. Alan Thomas, and the reason I asked that question is because obviously we look and examine the data of who are the audience members of BFE, and we see a lot of emergent and aspiring superintendents who view BFE. And I ask this question because I know that, when superintendents, reflective superintendents that want to grow, we always look back, right? What we could have done differently, specifically when we matriculate into the position. But I love your answer, specifically when you said you being authentic approach with understanding the systems, knowing that change is not superficial, and you have to be able to spend time, right? Spend time to understand the learning organization, specifically from a systems context, a systems level of design, various apparatuses that make the operating model totality around systems think. And I really love that aspect of systems leadership, understanding everything in totality. And I love that quote. If you can say it one more time, people don't care. I love it.
Oh, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care.
How much you care. And I think superintendents, and that was one of my faults, was I wanted people to know how much I know about the system. But what I could have done a better job on is obviously that authentic caring, meaning that going in, establishing the relationships, and having a true understanding of the system before making those changes. Great job with that, Dr. Alan Thomas. Really appreciate your leadership. But now I want to hit upon one of your extraordinary leadership qualities, right? And you have this passion to leverage a vision into reality. Now, for superintendents of schools, we know that it's a balance between, I like to say, equilibrium between Board of Education members and involving them through or involving them to support the vision through policy, but ensuring at the same time, right? This is the balance, ensuring at the same time, stakeholders are essential with the implementation process that leads us to the vision. Now, you have masterfully, and I analyzed your leadership articulation as well as your signature, but you have masterfully created this balance between strategic urgency and just navigating through that with your Board of Education and ensuring the implementation process is to this level of fidelity, but also integrity. Fidelity loosely, because we're going to make those course corrections during implementation. But I want you, for my VFV viewers, because like I said, I like to break things down and disaggregate them so that now my viewers can reconstruct it using this as an asynchronous method of professional learning. Okay. Unpack your strategies that promulgated this level of, I like to say, systematizing the vision, the strategy, ensuring your board is supporting this to our new leaders or even our veteran leaders that watch VFE.
Perfect. Thank you. So I'll even make it very simple. I'll do points. Number one, the vision starts with understanding that it's bigger than you. The vision is bigger than you. You have to see what people may not see or even what people may not even agree with. It's bigger than you. So you have to make sure that it's clear and that it will continue even in your absence. So that process, so that's the big first thing is you have to not, you have to be bold and you have to make sure that you understand that it's bigger than you. So don't get caught up in, well, this isn't possible. I don't see how this is going to work. It's bigger than you. You dream big. And next, what you do is once you have your vision, this is something that is co-created. So first thing that I just said, so I talked about the first thing is making the vision. Second was co-creating and revisiting. A lot of sitting superintendents, you've come into a district that already has a vision. You have to then say, is this something that we need to revisit, revise, or even co-create altogether? That's exactly what I did when I came into the school district. Again, the first year was observing. I was trying to connect, were the systems that were in place, were they aligning to what the vision was? And then determining, do we need to revisit which part? Do we need to revisit the vision? Or do we need to think about the systems we have in place? Well, we started with looking at the vision as well as our mission. And that was a board meeting. I started with my board because they are the ones that governance is over the school. So we started at our board retreat. I had a board retreat and I asked the board, what is our vision? That was the first question. A vision should be a statement that you could simply state in an elevator in less than 30 seconds and being able to not only state it, but also talk about how you're carrying that out through your mission. And so when I had as many, I had nine board members and I had nine interpretations. Interpretation is fine, but did they say the same thing? Yes. Were they agreeing and matching what the vision was? So at that point, we actually, I'm proud to say, they did. They were able to make sure that we ensure that our students are going to be 21st century ready, you know, and making sure that that understanding is, okay, do we now agree that our practices and our systems, how are we, you as a board, going to support the unpacking of our teaching and learning to make sure it aligns to the vision? So making sure, what are the practices that we are implementing? How is that going to get us to that vision? So that was another layer of, here's our comprehensive plan. This is when, you know, my leadership team, we got together and said, how are we going to meet this vision? We agreed with the board. That was one stakeholder. So there's multiple stakeholders. So I'm going to unpack how each stakeholder was part of this process. So we talked at the board level, how they were first introduced. My leadership, we talk about, they were actually at the board retreat. So they were able to hear and add to as well. I also sent out in my the end of my first year, I sent a survey to our families to see if our families understood what the vision was. That same survey, I had a drop-down box for my staff as well as my families. who I did not have on there, and if I had to do a do-over, were the students at that point. I have some other pain points where I did involve students, but at this one, it was our families, our staff, and our board were instrumental in setting the vision. Once we identified, again, the vision, we began to look at the strategies and systems to align with that. Well, as we began to go deeper, we realized we did not have an instructional framework at that point. People were teaching what they thought was the best thing to do. I have about 50% of my staff have been teaching 10 years or more. So they weren't new people, but I did have a relatively new staff, and I didn't want them to go and try to figure it out, and especially to experiment on our most vulnerable, marginalized students in Clareton. So we could not take that risk. So in last year, we worked with a consultant that helped us kind of walk through the process of looking at what an instructional framework looks like. Again, that is not something that should come from the superintendent, not from the leadership team, but it should come from all the stakeholders. So we invited our staff to participate in that process. So we at the leadership level had already had the three big ideas that we believed were I'll say the big ideas or the things that we needed to focus on. However, when we presented it to the staff, it very much aligned with the three areas that we identified. Were they worded differently? Absolutely. But when you summarized and you put them in buckets, you saw that they were saying that same thing. High expectations, personalized and customized learning, and a safe and welcoming school environment. Other superintendents would probably agree that's pretty much what we do, and that's the direction that we go when we think about our overall focus on our academics, attendance, and attitude. So after sharing that and getting that information from our staff, the next level, because this is still a work in progress. So the next level is to come up with a common language. So there's one thing to talk about high expectations, personalized and customized, learning. But what does high expectations mean for you? And so each month we have allocated 2 hours of professional development that we will continue to unpack, share K to 12 definitions around those ideas. Not only the definition, though, we have to also look at the practices so that when we are walking through and doing walkthroughs, we're able to identify a high yield practice that we could say, how is this across K to 12? I know that there are different learning ranges, but the practices are what have been proven, research has proven, that's what we want to utilize. And then finally, I would just say you need a process and adapt a cycle of improvement. So we do plan, do, check, act. That is, we plan, we look, we identify in that planning stage. Then we start looking at some of the strategies. We look at our research and our doing. Let's implement. And then we check, we evaluate. Is it working? Do we need to revise, revisit, change altogether? And then we go back to acting it out again. Whatever those tweaks were, we now act again and we start that process. So continuously being in that cycle is critical.
Dr. Alan Thomas, wow.
I
Okay,
know,
so
sorry, that was a mouthful. So.
no, Dr. Alan Thomas, I want to underscore that because I'm glad it was a mouthful. Because we use this, Dr. Alan Thomas, as an asynchronous professional learning mechanism where my viewers, my audience, what they do is they go back, replay answers. They go back, unpack strategies, extract specific strategies from an answer, look at different trends around systems and instruction and leadership, and go back and further investigate for their own practice as well. But this, Dr. Alan Thomas, is textbook 101. And I want to unpack this so my viewers would be able to go back in this answer and to go and go deeper and surgically take a look at the strategies that you provided. I really love the notion that you said the vision is bigger than you. I always like to reference a research study or a book that came out of Harvard University that talks about A leadership and C leadership, where you want the trajectory of your leadership vision to continue beyond you, establishing that. I love the aspect of co-creation, co-designing. You see a lot of that in design thinking. You see a lot of that in agile lean principles, but you don't really see that much in education from that comprehensive co-design and co-authoring aspect, where you're revisiting, revising, and then co-creation around the mission and the vision. And I love how you said that the vision has to be less than 30 seconds. You don't want a mouthful. Everybody knows what that one liner or two lines look like. But creating an instructional framework that goes back to visible manifestations around artifacts with culture. You talk about strategies and systems and the big ideas around the strategic priorities. Creating that level set shared mental model with your board of education, as well as ensuring that there's a common language of systems, a common language of instruction that's around high expectation and the cycle of improvement around definitions and practices. Dr. Alan Thomas, again, alignment and coherence to my audience, play that back. But I want to extract an element that you talked about, okay, Dr. Alan Thomas. And I want to extract the element that focuses on strategies and systems to create a vision around instruction, i.e., the Clariton instructional framework that you co-designed and co-created with the stakeholders and communities. And I love how you got the community input to ensure that they're part of the vision. But from this coherence aspect, right? Lamenting instructional systems with coherence is so hard, but you've created that in Clariton City. What is now, just like I pulled it out, if you can again surgically, what is your systems methodology around realignment and creating that culture to ensure there's that shifting to improve the quality and rigor of pedagogy? Now, you talked about one of the first manifestation that I like to reference around Shine's work is the instructional framework. But now, if you can go deeper to the values and the basic assumptions around quality and rigor aligned to that visible manifestation, i.e., the Clariton instructional framework.
And as it just and I love how you frame that, because you start with the vision and then you continue to unpack till you get down to the bare bottom, or what I call the root cause analysis.
Absolutely.
So the process of creating that alignment, it was birthed out of the deep dive into our processes of looking at, I'll give one example. We had to look at academics. So we have three main areas that we focus on: academics, attendance, and attitude. And when we unpack the academics, which falls under that high expectations, we looked at assessments. We looked at, those affirmative, summative, grading. So we had to make sure that what we were doing systematically, was it aligning to high expectations? What did the questions on the assessment look like? What type of grading processes did we have? Well, originally there we didn't have weighted grades, so you could have a teacher who gave, let's say, three assessments, and a teacher who gave 10 assessments, a teacher who gave one assessment. And that discussion really, that was birthed out of my students who were athletes, who were saying, I wasn't eligible to play, but I only had one opportunity to even make a difference in that grade that week because I only had this amount of assignments. So I have a superintendent advisory group, and I have it for that reason. I monthly meet with them to help me understand, are these practices and systems working? So the first one was looking at rigor, looking at the academic systems for grading, for even the quantity of how many assignments were under classwork, under assessments. It, I wouldn't say seemed small. It clearly was something that did not have laser focus attention. But when you begin to dig deeper, you begin to unpack the inequities that exist, because it should not be based on, if I'm in this teacher's class, I get this type of opportunities and chances to improve my grade. But if I'm in this teacher's class, I better get it the first time because I don't get other opportunities. So again, I'm using a real example of looking at high expectations. So as we begin to unpack like the processes and practices that teachers were utilizing, we drill down to what types of questions are we asking? What types of assessments are we giving? And what is the long-term outcome that we're hoping to have? And what measure are we using to determine that? So in Pennsylvania, you have your Pennsylvania State Assessments that all of us, you know, in the state are held accountable for. That's one measure. What other measures are we going to look at to make sure that our kids, our scholars are showing growth? Because everyone may not be at 80%. You might be in a below basic category. And what does it mean? You might grow 500 points, 200 points, 30 points, whatever that is. We need to look at what growth means for that individual. So again, we looked at the root cause analysis. So I'll just give you examples of looking at assessments, grading as that root cause. After looking at that, I brought in a teacher focus group because I wanted to know from them. So I heard from my students. The leadership had did the high level of saying, hey, we did observations in classrooms, we did walkthroughs, and we were seeing that there were some classrooms that had the objective posted, some classes that had starters, some classes that had word walls. So we knew that there was not a consistent expectation that we could visibly see or students could walk into from class to class, from school to school. So then I went to the students and said, tell me about school. How do you feel about, you know, what you're learning? And I had some real unfiltered responses from students that led me to go deeper, like I said, about grading, about the types of assessments. Mm-hmm. So when I brought that to the teachers, they all had different beliefs and practices regarding high expectations as well. So again, that unpacking led us to now what we have and what we're implementing is data chat. Stop, drop, and do data, because we realize that we need to look at the data and mm-hmm. then do that same cycle. Again, the cycle of improvement is critical, because once we identified that root cause, once we identified, and we had stakeholders, we had our students and our staff involved in saying, hey, we're off. We're not speaking the same language as it relates to high expectations. So now we're going to have discussions. It's teacher to student, it's teacher to administrator, and this year it's going to be superintendent to administrator as well. With the same, I'm modeling, and they really, my administrators appreciate the fact that I'm modeling the first data chat with them so they can roll it out with their teachers. And so being an authentic leader is doing just that, modeling that expectation that you would have for them. So as we continue to stop, drop, and do data, that will allow us to be, again, to really continue that root cause analysis, as I would say. And then we'll follow up with the walkthroughs. We'll follow up with my superintendent advisory groups. Mm-hmm. And most importantly, we'll see it on our state assessment.
Dr. Allen Thomas, another textbook answer, right? And
I didn't take it from a textbook. Trust me, this is what I'm living every day. But I do look at research, so I do.
Yes, you do. Oh, yes, you do. And that's what I love about your work, is that you execute the research with this high level of integrity. And it's just like, wow, it's just systematically unpacking the different tiers or the variety of different research that you're creating as a conglomerate. But what I love about this is how you unpacked and you went through your thinking of how you unpacked academic systems down to its core processes, where that now you are being very, very intentional in getting or including the voice of your teachers, but also going deeper from an equity lens. We're asking your students, but bringing it back to the leadership and to your stakeholders to unpack the specific themes and patterns from your students, to go back and to iterate again against the model. Wow, unbelievable. But what I love about it again too, is how you're eliminating intentionally the instructional variances within your district, where now rigor is aligned where there isn't variance amongst teachers, as you gave that highlighted description of an example, but rigor is going to be in totality, no matter what class you're going to. Wow, amazing, amazing. Again, to my audience again, and it focuses on academics, attitude, and attendance, or academics, attendance, and attitude. Just very, very intentional, very surgical, but I love how you go back and you interrogate the student feedback to improve the system. Unbelievable, Dr. Alan Thomas. But in my work specifically, you know, I've been underscoring equity and innovation principles to work in this symbiotic context, right? So meaning innovation as the pillar to leverage equity for, I always say each and all, right? That's kind of like AEG's 30-second high-level vision. We're going to achieve each and all. But equity has become so polarized, Dr. Alan Thomas. And when we look at equity for all, we can substitute the word with excellence or priorities for all, and people would accept it. I don't get the parallelization with the polarization of the definition of the word, because we all want our kids to achieve. But with innovation, creativity, and I like to say these high level of intelligent systems, i.e. AI, emergent technologies, generative systems, right? We know that we can reach every child. So that is equity is the, can you define equity in its simplest form rooted in your leadership signature? And then also what I want you to do is define innovation to achieve each and all.
So the best way that I can summarize equity, and I'm a visual learner, so I always think of most educators seeing the child on the box and how you have so many boxes to get to be able to see over the fence. And it's giving students what they need. And the way I summarize it, it's like continuously seeking new and creative approaches to teaching and learning that meets and involves the needs of our scholars. That's what I've pretty much shared previously. That's why I continuously seek the opinion, the experience of the ones who are impacted, which are our scholars. And so equity means making sure they have a voice. It's being able to make sure that regardless of your background, your circumstance, you have a right to a quality education. And then when you look at innovation, you look at, I think of thinking outside the box, and it's creating environments where students have the opportunity to succeed through a personalized and customized inclusive opportunity. And again, that was one of that actually was highlighted when we were looking at instructional model. So it fits perfectly when I look at that co-creation of equity and innovation. It's that customized and personalized learning process. And it allows us to break down any barriers that may happen and that may come up, we can deal with immediately.
Absolutely. And Dr. Alan Thomas, well stated, profound, because I love the definition of how you, what you said, the equity, because I think that should be the overall goal of every single learning organization, is giving students exactly what they need, right? And I think that we need to be able to carry that notion specifically, and I like to always say it in analytical and statistical context of defining that and going even deeper, disaggregating that data, looking at the student groups with intentionality, with a level of boldness. And we have to be aware of where our students are and exactly what they need. I always like to say intentional, bold, and we have to be unapologetic when we do it. But that level of personalization, I always say when we reach a level of personalization around the systems and the core processes that we are going to be implementing, that is this residual effect that promulgates equity and the work of reaching all to ensure that we're giving them what they need. So Dr. Alan Thomas, right? And again, I'm happy to see you in the seat. I think we need to see more women of color in the seat. It is a national crisis that we don't have Black or brown women, Black women specifically. I believe that is under 2% nationally. It's like 1.5, 1.6. I don't know if somebody was fact checking me, but it's 1-point-something% that we see women leaders in color, specifically when I disaggregate that, isolate it to African American or Black women that are sitting in the seat. So, we know the raw data out there. We know we can concur that it is egregious, but there's an urgency, around this for continued discussions to curtail this macro quandary that we're seeing in education. But when we address it, we only see it shift marginally. So, Dr. Alan Thomas, right? I want this to be kind of like your call of action for the 24-25 academic year so that we can see more of Black and brown women, Black women specifically matriculating into the role. So, how do we create this national urgency into action for women and women of color to matriculate successfully into the chief executive or superintendent role?
Sounds like you read my dissertation.
Oh.
My dissertation, my actual dissertation was on the challenges African American women in Pennsylvania face as they pursue and serve in the superintendency role. So the research, as you stated, it's, and I focused on Pennsylvania, but in Pennsylvania, for example, there's 26% are women. And then it was, and then it, the data also shared 3.8% are African Americans. The number is so small for women that it doesn't even break it out for women and men because 3.8% is what it is in Pennsylvania. And even when I was doing my research, I could not even find 8 women superintendents. And so, me sitting here 6 months after I had completed my dissertation, it's pretty profound, right? I wrote about it and now here I sit. And so what I also found in research was why are there not this number of African Americans, women especially, in this role? When you look at teachers, there's 70% are women, about 35% are African American, and you're like, so how does it not translate into this leadership role? Well, one of the biggest factors is in this role, there aren't others that look like you that mentor you. Can you be mentored by others? Absolutely. I have some of the best mentors who don't look like me, but have helped me navigate this system. And I am eternally grateful for them. However, there was not someone I look to and aspire to be like. So that has been always my goal, is that I want to be that inspiration because, let's be honest, there are different challenges that African American women face that, unfortunately, that our Caucasian partners don't face. We have what's called the double whammy. Now, and so, as I walk this walk with my Caucasian superintendents, understanding that they know that it's different for me, and all the research out here says it's different for me. And so one of the strategies that I think is really critical is making sure that in the earlier, like in my original research, I had stated that college level, high school, it was important to make sure that there were pathways and that there were more opportunities to see and experience the educational realm. Like your student teacher position should be earlier, shouldn't be into your third or fourth year. If we could have opportunity for that type of exposure earlier, it would be greater. Let's not wait till high school to engage students in looking at a career in education. That starts in kindergarten. I knew at 7 that I wanted to be a teacher of teachers, is what I told my mom. So those types of careers, we need to make sure that they're in front of them. But we also, the charge is the education system itself. No one wants to be in a broken system. No one wants to be part of a process that doesn't see the value in them, that doesn't pay, and that doesn't support. And so we need to look at policies and practices and resources to really help us offset that. That is going to be a critical piece And that comes from our local government all the way up to our state government. Across, you know, we got to look at this across the country, not just in Pennsylvania.
And Dr. Alan Thomas, thank you for that. I love that. Policy, practices, and resources. I always say representation matters. And I'm sure when those young girls see you in Clareton City, they are saying to themselves, I know I can be a superintendent one day. And I'll tell you this, there are two leaders that I absolutely admire as superintendents in Pennsylvania, and they happen to be in the same sorority, Delta Sigma Theta Incorporated. Of course, you, Dr. Alan Thomas, and then Dr. Burks, who is in Allentown. So last question, you made it through VFB.
Yes.
And Dr. Alan Thomas, listen, I'm going to try, but I don't know if I'm going to be successful to hold you to three words, okay?
Oh, you're... I got afraid. And I love that you said that. Okay.
So. I'm just going to say, I'm going to try. Attempt.
Yes, I love it.
I'm going on this, I like to say, predictive stance that I'm not going to be successful with that. But Dr. Alan Thomas, what three words do you want our audience to leave regarding innovation, equity, and excellence in the AC stage of education, which is after COVID-19?
Let's not lower the standard. So high expectations, number one, for all. Our students want it. They deserve it. They need it. Next, I would say, be a risk taker. Don't be afraid of the no. Finally, make sure that we are customizing for our individual buildings, because a lot of times when we look at research, we instantly say we can't, or that's them, or that's how they do it. Customize it. Research is research. Then you have, as the leader, you have to customize it for your organization. So high expectations, be a risk taker, and customization. And I have to leave you with this quote. This is my signature quote.
Yes.
And it has sustained me throughout my educational career. And this is by Charles Swindoll. It says, we are all faced with a series of great opportunities, brilliantly disguised as impossible situations.
Ooh, Dr. Alan Thomas, this is going to be a first on VFP. That is a mic. I can't follow up on that. I don't want to dare follow up on that, but I do want to say high expectations, being a risk taker, and that level of customization. Dr. Alan Thomas, the proud superintendent of Clarendon City School District, made it through VFP. But here's the extension. My audience, they always reach out to different guests that are on VFB with specific questions, something that might have resonated with them during the episode. How would they be able to get in touch with you, Dr. Alan Thomas?
I have a very long email, but I'm ready if you are. I'll go ahead and spell it out slowly.
Go right
ahead. Last name, Alan, A-L-L-E-N, hyphen, Thomas, T-H-O-M-A-S, with a T, which represents my first name, at symbol, C as for Clareton, another C for city, S for school, D for district, Bears, BEARS.org.
Thank you, Dr. Alan Thomas. Keep being not only the Pennsylvania model, but keep being the national model for leadership. I can tell you this, the transcript from this episode is going to be full of different evidence-based, research-based, I like to say next-in-class practices to be able to integrate into your individual learning organization. So Dr. Alan Thomas, thank you for being an honored guest on VFE.
Thank you.
And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.